Today we have an agada to learn, and we're talking about a concept called Kesher Rishoyim. It's a bit of a strange concept. If you recall, we had a long discussion about Kohanim, and that they were chashudim perhaps on shvius. And this all evolved from a trip in which Reish Lakish had accompanied Rav Chiya and Rav Shimon, and he criticized Rav Chiya and Rav Shimon for not castigating those, he assumed they were Kohanim, who were violating Shvius. And when he met with Rabbi Yochanan, and he questioned whether Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon would be able to be accepted, they would qualify for Ibur Hashanah as part of a Beis Din. So Reish Lakish had said that, are you allowed to accept as Dayanim Roi Bakar, meaning people who are totally ignorant of the Torah law? And even if I grant you that in the past we've had situations which Bezdin relied on Roi Bakar to be Ma'abra Lashana, however, that was only because they listened to what the Roi Bakar had to say. But at the end of the day, the Beis Din made the decision on their own. And if you'll tell me that in this case also, Beis Din is going to make the decision on their own, says Reish Lakish, but how could you integrate Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Chiya, who are Choshen al Shvius, into the Beis Din? Let's say the Beis Din is made up of 3 or 5 or 7, whatever number of judges you need for Ibur Shana. 2 out of those... are going to be psulim, are going to be roi bakar. And here we have a principle, kesher rishoyim eino min haminyan, meaning that if the integration of these two judges together with the other judges who are kosher, and these two are rishoyim, which is a very heavy word to use when you're talking about two of the chachmei Yisrael, but we don't appreciate the fire and brimstone here between Reish Lakish, who's a contemporary, and Rav Chiya and Rav Shimon. But in any event, that's called Kesher Rishoyim. Now, this phrase Kesher Rishoyim sort of is a springboard for a whole agadata to try to find the source, the root, the original Kesher Rishoyim. Where would Reish Lakish was talking to Rav Yochanan, and he compared the situation of Chiya and Rav Shimon to Kesher Rishoyim. Where did he get that from? My Kesher Rishoyim. So we're on Daf Chavav Amud Aleph, and we're up to my Kesher Rishoyim. Can you give us some sort of an indication where on the page you'll find my Kesher Rishoyim?
Second
of the wide line. Excellent. Okay. And as I always say, I had a Gemara here, but I'm still looking for it. But anyway.
Why are Roe and Bucker called psulin if they're accepted?
So that's what Reish Lakish is assuming, that they're not really accepted. What they're going to do is they're going to give their recommendation to the Beis Din, and ultimately the Beis Din is going to make the decision. There are many shikulim, many factors that enter into the equation, whether we should add a month of Adar or not. You remember we had sugyas about that in the first parak. So we're going to allow the Roi Bakar to sit and weigh the pros and cons, but at the end of the day, after their recommendation is presented, we're going to need a bona fide Beis Din of Bekiyim, of those who know the law, to actually establish the extra month of Adar, make the year into a Shana Muberes. Here we have a particular problem according to Reish Lakish's perspective, because in his understanding, Reb Chiya and Reb Shimon are apostle, And it's not that we're going to rely on their recommendation as if they were, you know, shepherds from the street, but that they make up the Bezdin. And that's called Kesher Rishon. So my Kesher Rishon, what's the original Kesher Rishon? Where does it come from? So we're going to talk now about a person who was a member of the court. When I say court, I don't mean Bezdin, but I mean the king's court of officers at the time of Chizkiyo Melech Yehuda. And as you know, Chizkiyo Melech Yehuda was a great tzaddik. Chazal say that they were mavakish that Chizkiyo should be the Melech HaMashiach, but the dar wasn't ready for it. But he himself, Chizkiyo Melech Yehuda, was so great that he could have been Mashiach. But he had a rotten apple in the bunch. He had a certain fellow by the name of Shevna. And this fellow Shevna was very high as an officer in the king's court, in the governing of Yehuda at that time, of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. And this Shevna was apparently not only a rotten fellow, but he was also quite a... A demagogue? Is this such a word?
Yeah.
Right, he was a demagogue. You know, he was a rabble-rouser. He had an amazing amount of people who followed him, and they were disciples of his. He created a break-off group against Chizkiyo Melech Yehuda, and it was a very powerful group. He had demagogic powers or qualities. You know, I'm reminded of Korach. They say about Korach that he had a qualm against Moshe and Aaron, and he gathered together the people, and he got 250 followers. But this guy, Shevna, was a lot more popular than Korach. As we'll soon see, the numbers are unbelievable of how many people gathered around him. Okay then? So Shevna, Havidorish, Bitlesar Ravosa. In other words, when he gave his lectures and he presented his ideology, and it was a political ideology, that he had 13 rivavos anoshim. Now, rivava is 10,000. So how much do you get when you multiply 13 times 10,000? That's 130,000. I mean, that's a massive amount of people. Korach had 250. And look what a havoc he wrecked. But now we're talking about a lot more than 250. We're talking about 130,000 followers. And this guy, he had his ideology. You know, my mind, the first thing that crosses my mind, again, Lahavdil, but I think of Hitler. You know, Hitler, you know, you've seen all the... all the videos of Hitler and the massive amount of people that followed this guy. He was not a great genius, Hitler, but he was demagogically, you know, and he touched on anti-Semitism, which, you know, that's what they wanted to hear at that time. They needed to blame someone, if you wanted to use it that way. Now, Chizkiyah, who obviously is the opponent of Shevna, how many people did he have in his group? Havidorish Bechad Sar Ravavasa. So he only had 11 times 10, which is, let's say, 110,000. So who had the majority if you compare 130,000 of Shevna to 110,000 of Chizkiyah? So who had the majority?
Shevna
had the majority. He was so powerful. Now, where did this political controversy come to the fore? At that time, the king of Ashur, of Assyria, was Sancheriv. Sancheriv was one of the most powerful conquerors of all history. And he, of course, hated the Jews. And he surrounded Yerushalayim, and he put a siege on Yerushalayim. And basically, the issue was, should we surrender, or should we fight the battle? Those who had faith in God wanted to fight the battle. Those who did not wanted to give up. They wanted to placate the king, in this case, Sancheriv. So, Kosav Shivna Piska, so Shevna writes a note, Shada Begira, and he attaches it to an arrow. Gira is an arrow. And he's inside the walls of Yerushalayim, and he shoots the arrow outside the walls, so they'll get the message, and Sancheriv will receive this note. And what was written in the note? Shevna v'siyoso hishlimu. Shevna, mean I myself signed on this note, and my group of followers, which again 130,000 strong, hishlimu, we're ready to make peace with you. You know, we're gonna open the doors for you, and you're gonna conquer the land without a battle, basically, and establish Ashur and the kingdom of Ashur in Jerusalem.
Appeasement,
excellent. Chizki obviously also lowishly, but he tells Sancheriv that you should know the evil one is Chizkiah, because he wants to fight the battle against you. So this is like the worst treason that, against the king that you could imagine. And all this is based on a pasuk in Tehillim. It's interesting. You know, we would have looked in Sefer Melachim, but here we're going to open up to Sefer Tehillim, and it says, Ki hine harishoim yidrachun keshes konenu chitzam al yeser, and the end of the pasuk is liros v'mo ofel yishrei lev. And this pasuk is talking about the rishoim who are headed up by none other than Shevna. And again, the pasuk doesn't mention Shevna by name, but Chazal understood that this was an allusion to Shevna. Yidrachun keshes, which means he pulls his bow, his arrow back, in other words, the pressure of dricha of the arrow when you pull it back, and he sends in that arrow a konenu yet chitza, which is a kind of a letter on a chetz, on an arrow. And what does he want to do? Liros means to kill by the force of an arrow. And here Chazal say that Lashon Hara could kill. He's speaking Lashon Hara against the king. And in this letter that he sends to Sancheriv, he basically says that the evil ones are Chizkiah. And Yishrei Lev, which is in plural, is a reference not only to Chizkiah, but also to Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu the Navi was the great backbone of the Jewish people, those who were dedicated and loyal to God, to the Mesorah of Torah. And Yeshayahu had a tremendously close relationship with Chizkiah. As a matter of fact, if you're learning Daf Yomi, if any of you are learning Daf Yomi, or if any of you would vote in favor of us learning Daf Yomi at this 9:30 slot, at 8:30, but at 9:30 we do Iyun in Daf Yomi. But if anyone wants to do a fast-paced Daf Yomi, let me know, because 8:30 would be a great time for me. The only thing is I love Sanhedrin, so I'm caught in a battle here. But in any event, so the Daf Yomi tells us that Yeshayahu eventually married off his daughter to Chizkiyahu HaMelech. In other words, Yeshayahu was not only the Navi, he was the king's father-in-law. The king himself, Chizkiyahu, was married to Yeshayahu's daughter. Anybody know why Chizkiyahu HaMelech did not get married for a long time? I mean, he was what you call an alter bacha.
But he thought his children were
going to
be evil or something.
Excellent, right. He saw in Ruach HaKodesh his children would be real evildoers. And in fact, he the only reason he changed his mind is because Yeshayahu implored him to get married. And then Chizkiyahu turns to him and he says, well, to get married and then have these kinds of children, but if you marry off your daughter to me, maybe in your schus and in my schus, you know, me as the father of these children and you as the grandfather of these children, maybe the children will go on the right path. But at the end of the day, it didn't help. I mean, the marriage was set. I would have liked to have been invited to that wedding, the matching wedding between the king and the daughter of the Navi, but the children were terrible. Anyway, so getting back to Yeshayahu and Navi, the Yishrei Lev here include both Chizkiyahu HaMelech and Yeshayahu HaNavi, and Shevna is speaking very, very bad words here about the two of them, and that's Lashon Hara. Now it's interesting that this Pasuk in Tehillim is obviously authored by whom? David Amel, correct? David was the Tehillim.
Yeah.
And what he's trying to teach us is something about the Derech HaRishoyim. The Derech HaRishoyim is that they get hold of an arrow and they use that arrow to shoot off words of malign, you know, maligning words against others. And that's the powerful, the killer, the murderous power of the Rishoyim to use this kind of a Lashon Hara, which in this case was written on a page and then sent by arrow, in order to achieve the goal of literally having someone killed. You can imagine what the king of Ashur would do if he got a hold of Chizkiyahu and Yeshayahu HaMelech. Now, it's also true that an arrow is somewhat beseser. What I mean beseser is that unless you see the person shooting the arrow flies, you know, through the air at a very great speed. It's very hard to see the arrow. So some people, you know, they cover over the Lashon Hara that they want to do, the libel that they want to, just completely destroy someone else's reputation. Okay, so now we're up to the following point. Shevna has sent this message in a letter. Havikom Mistafe Chizkia. Now, Mistafe means afraid. Chizkia, in the picture you get from Chazal, is a very complex combination of what we call emuna or bitachon, reliance on Hashem, and reality oriented. To some extent, his feet are on the ground, and you know he looks at reality in from a perspective of natural cause and effect. But yet he has a vision of God, and in this case, he is overwhelmed by fear. And the reason for that is because Shevna has the majority with him. Most of the people who voice their opinion have accepted the view of Shevna. Because he had Shlosha Sar Ribui, whereas Chizkiyahu only had Achara Sar Ribui. Dilma, here was his fear, Chas V'Shalom, Notya Daite the Kutchabrichu Basaruba, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his Torah writes Achrei Rabim Lahatos. And maybe God follows that rule in this particular case, and he's going to side with the majority. The came under Ruba Mimsere Inu Nami Mimsere. The Rove want to give up their position, they want to surrender to Sancheret. So perhaps the people who support Chizkiyah would also be influenced by the Rove, and they'll say, look, the majority says we should surrender, we'll also agree to surrender. So at this point, we need the Navi, we need Yeshayahu HaNavi. And this is so typical, that whenever Chizkiyah wavers back and forth, it's Yeshayahu who steps up to the plate to give him the right perspective. From a spiritual perspective, the Omer Lo, and Yeshayahu says to Chizkiyah, Lo somrun kesher lakol, asher yomar ha'om hazeh kesher. The key word here is kesher. In other words, don't be afraid, Chizkiyah, because of the numbers here that Shevna has garnished, has gathered together. Because the people think that this number is a very impressive number, but you know what? Lo somrun kesher lakol. Don't be afraid and say, well, this connection between Shevna and the majority of the Jewish people who are following Shevna's ideological battle and his position, don't be afraid of them. Ha'am choshev shu nechshav minyan u'machmas ken yesh lem rov. If you're afraid that in the eyes of God there's a rov here, there is no rov. What do you mean there is no rov? we counted heads, and Shevna has a rove. And if we're going to be noted to the rove, then we should be surrendering. Name. Comes along Yeshaya and he says, that's not called a rove. Why? Klomar, what Yeshayo was telling us, is that Kesher Rishoyim Hu, that what you have together is a group, a knot of a club or a membership in a group which is made up of Rishoyim. The Kesher Rishoyim ain't Obin Aminyan. And the connection between Rishoyim is not considered a minyan. Minyan means where we're all on the same page, we're all tzaddikim, we're all trying to serve Hashem, and then we'll determine based on the rov what the final decision will be. But there's no such thing as a minyan to count and come to some sort of number which would be rov when you're counting Rishoyim, because there's no such thing as a chibur, as an integration of Rishoyim. In the case of Rishoyim, every single individual is a Rasha unto himself, but there's no tziruf. You don't make a minion and count for minion. Rishoyim, the heads of Rishoyim, do not integrate to form a minion. And therefore they cannot express a dea, an opinion, which is the rov. Yeah, Gershon?
Well, the precedent is Shalach Lachar Anashim, and that's called a Eda Ra'ah. I mean, the majority of the
So you're asking Akasha, in other words, how could it be that in the case of the Meraglim, the Torah calls it Eda when it's Rishoyim? Why is it called an Eda? Just one second.
Well, I'm just focusing on the fact that the majority, were wrong there. That's all.
But you're asking a good question. Right. I mean, there's a halach of minyan over there. No, we derive from the Meraglim, because the Torah used the word Eda. By the way, the reason I'm coughing is not because until now, if you've noticed, I've coughed. That's because I had a problem. But the reason I'm coughing now is because the doctor gave me a certain spray. And my body, hasn't yet gotten used to that spray. It's going to take a little while. So when I spray, I inhale this thing, it has an impact on my voice and so forth and so on. If I can get the doctor on the phone, I can ask him if there's anything I can do for that. So, but don't get nervous about that. Anyway. So getting back to your question, Gershon, so how could the Gemara say that Kesher Rishoyim ain't Ominyan when in the case of the Meraglim we say that it is called a minyan, and the Torah calls it an Eda? So I would say the following, one of two answers. Either we would say the following, that although the Meraglim were Rishoyim, in that particular context, but they weren't Rishoyim through and through, so to speak. In other words, they weren't anti-Jewish. They felt that in this case, we don't have a chance. I'm not coming to justify the Meraglim. Yeah, so I'm just saying that it's not like the case of Shevna. I mean, Shevna is
pushing
through. Yeah, he's trying to undermine the entire structure of the state of Israel. If you follow me, we're talking about Yechizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. The second answer might be that we're only borrowing the word Eda from the Meraglim to establish that 10 is the magic number that makes up an Eda. We're not saying that the Meraglim themselves were an Eda. I don't know. That's something that you'd have to research. But your question is excellent. Well, let's continue. We go beyond in this story. Holach lachtov lo kever bekivrei beis David. He wanted to show Shevna how secure, how convinced he was that his letter would achieve its goal. So he goes to the cemetery, which is designated for the kings of Beis David, because Chizkiyahu HaMelech is a great grandson of David HaMelech, and he digs him a kever. He says, it's a matter of time, that in tomorrow's papers we're going to find out that Sancheirav hung up Chizkiyahu from a tree, and here's his kever. But Navi V'Amarlo, Yeshaya comes to tell him, Malachapo, Umilachapo, what's your purpose here? And which members of your family are buried here, that you're coming to bury someone from your family. You came here to bury someone apparently from your family, because this is a family plot. This plot, this burial plot, is designated exclusively for the house of David. And now at this point, Yeshayahu, after having rebuked him for who are you to dig a kever, he tells him what's going to be his punishment. Hine Hashem mitaltalecha taltela gover. Okay, God is going to move you from place to place. What, you have a translation there?
No.
Just, yeah. Do you have a translation, or no. Reuven, you have a translation? Tiltal usually to move from place to place.
Wander, it says.
Wander? Oh, you will wander from place to place. Like a man who's wandering. Rashi says that the word gever here is a reference to a tarnagol, to a rooster that moves from side to side. So you're going to be like this rooster that wanders from side to side. The Gemara clarifies what this means. Amar Rav, what is the Navi telling Shevna? Tiltula de gavra kashi mi de isisa. That if someone is male as opposed to a female and he moves from one place to the other, that's very difficult, even more difficult for a male than it is for a female. I guess it means that a man has to build up his reputation in one place, and you move him to another place, he's got to start, he so to speak has to start from scratch. Now in the footnote he quotes the Radak on Yeshaya. He says that a woman will always find compassion wherever she is. So even if she gets uprooted from her local, secure neighborhood, but people in the other neighborhood will have rachmanis on havala ish lo, but people don't have that same kind of rachmanis for a man. Vanavi amarlo sheyelich lemakom shelo yirachmu olav. That ultimately, Shevna, you'll find yourself in a place where you will have no... No one will extend any sort of compassion to you. The Marsha, by the way, says that even within one city, even if you don't leave the city, it's still difficult to move from one part of the city to the other for a man. Even though you don't need Rachmanis if you move from one part of the city to the other. So the Marsha leaves it as an open question. Why is this tiltal more difficult for a man than a woman? And the Ein Yak wants to give a more metaphysical explanation of this, and he says that man was created from the dust of the earth, whereas a woman was created from the rib, from the bone of a man. And when you try to move something that's ground, you know, it's very difficult. You really have to work hard to dig into the ground to move the dirt on the ground. Fine. Then the Pasuk says the following. V'otcha ato. In other words, God's going to send you flying. You'll be flying into exile like the birds fly, you know, fly south. Okay. Amar Rabbi Yossi b'Rab Chanina. Melamed, what does this mean? Something that flies. Now the word parcha, which is the Hebrew word for ato, means to break out. When something breaks out, it sort of like flies in all directions. That's called parcha. Melamed sheparcha bo tzaras. That this Shevna was struck in with some form of leprosy. Now when you talk about leprosy, you talk about pircha. It's parcha. It spreads throughout the body. And ksiv hocha, how do I know, says Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, that this otcha oto is a reference to tzaras, because in addition to this pasuk in Yeshaya, ksiv hosam in the parasha Mitzora, in Vayikra Yud Gimel, it says there, v'al safam yate, that once a person is declared to be a Mitzora, when the kohen is metamehim, then he has to wear a certain some sort of a yata, an ituf. Olav latof is rosho. He's got to cover his head, and the top of his talus has to reach his lips. This is a kind of a humiliation, that people should identify him as a mitzora. So we know now that the Navi is foretelling that Shevna is going to be stricken by leprosy. The Gemara now quotes another pasuk in that same chapter in Yeshayahu Perkov Beis. It says, "Tzanof yitznofcha tznefa kadur." Now, tzanof means to circle. What we call like a sivivon, that goes round and around. And God is going to surround you with soldiers like a kadur. Kadur is a shura, is a line. So there are going to be lines of soldiers, and they're going to surround you to send you into golus. El eretz rachvas yadayim. And the next part of the pasuk is shoma tamus. And there, in that land where they expel you to that land, you will die. Veshama, the end of the pasuk says, Markavos kvodecha kolon beis adonecha. You will be the humiliation of your household, the household of your master, meaning of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Because initially, early in his career, Shevna was a loyal member of that household.
Mm-hmm. And he had to be a tzaddik, perhaps, to be stricken with tzaraat. It does not only happen to people who were originally
evil.
No, originally tzaddik, perhaps.
Perhaps. I don't know. Tana, we learned in a brisa, who Shevna bikesh kolon beis adonov lefichach nefach kvodo lekolon. As he tried to undermine and humiliate the house of his master, and therefore he became a humiliation. He was humiliated himself, and this means that midah kineged midah, that he would suffer measure for measure. Now, what happens when Shevna and all his people go out of the city of Yerushalayim to meet with Sanherev and surrender? Right, they open up the gates, and these masses, throngs of these followers now move towards Sanherev to accept Sanherev as their king. Ki avinofik iu, first he himself left the city, and his followers are following behind. Asa Gavriel. Now Gavriel is the malach who meets out punishment. Achte lidosha bi'ape mashriyosa. He locks the door that separates all the followers of Shevna from Shevna, so that all the people, the disciples of Shevna, are locked inside Yerushalayim. Here we turn to Chavav Amid Beis. Amrullah. So now Shevna is alone, and the people in Sanherib's group turn to Shevna and they say, "Masheyaroscha hecha, where is your whole shayara? Where is your whole your camp of people that came according to your letter that would accompany you to surrender?" Omar Shevna says, "Hajubi." Apparently, they changed their mind, and they forsake me. In other words, they weren't good for their promise. Because again, it seems that Shevna did not know that there was some sort of the supernatural event here, that Gavriel had locked them in. Amrule, so the people of Sanherib turned to Shevna. They say, "Imkain, if you didn't bring any people as you had promised, is achoche kamachaychis ben. You're really making fun of us." Chuche means to laugh. And therefore, they wanted to punish him. Nikbuhu ba'akevav uslauhu bezanve susehem v'ahoyu megarin osal akotziv alabarkonin. So I don't want to go into all the nitty-gory details here, but apparently they sent him flying. First they put many injuries into his body, even in his feet, the heel of his feet, and they seem to have attached him to the tail of a horse, and he was being dragged over thorny areas, and apparently they sent him flying. I don't know exactly to where, but wherever it was, not too many people had compassion on him. Now the Gemara makes a comment about the personality of Shevna. Why was he so inclined towards evil? What was the root of his problem? Shevna Baal Hanahaya. He was a person who was very hedonistic. In other words, he was governed and controlled by his desire for pleasure. Now, some say that he was a homosexual, and the Adrama says that he would present himself to many different men, or whatever it is. Anyway, Ksiv Hocha, how do we know that Shevna was a Baal Hanoh? He was a pleasure seeker. So it says with regard to Shevna that God said to Yeshayahu HaNavi, Lech bo el hasochein hazeh. It's interesting, when God sends Yeshayahu initially to encounter Shevna and accost him, he's called a sochein.
Agent.
Now what does a sochein mean? So on one level, he's some sort of an imposter. You know, he presents one face, but he's really something else. But Chazal took the word sochein, and they looked for a deeper secret meaning in the word sochein, because they found the same word elsewhere. And elsewhere it has some sort of an implication of some sort of sexual pleasure. Ksiv Hoch, it says here, by David HaMelech, that when he was older, he was very cold, and he told his servants that they should bring him a young girl, Utehilo Sochenes, that she would warm up his body, and that's how he would enjoy the warmth of a female body, and then he would solve his warmth. So you see that Sochen, or in this case Sochenes, has the connotation of Hanoh, some sort of a Hanoh, a pleasure that people get from physical contact. The Marsha adds a point here that Shevna knew Torah, and as you said before, Reuven, initially he was a Talmud Chacham, and what the Gemara wants to say is that if it bothers to us, what caused him to go so sour if he was a Talmud Chacham? And the answer is because essentially, even though he's a Talmud Chacham and he was teaching Torah, but nevertheless he was a Baal Hanoh. He had a tremendous drive for pleasure. And someone who has a drive for pleasure ultimately builds himself up. And the Gemara Brachas tells us, Ein HaTorah Miskayemes El B'misha Meimis Atzmo Lev Lo B'Bali Hanos. That for Torah to have a kiyum, you know, to continue to persist, it has to be someone who is not dedicated exclusively to Hanoh. Alright, let's see if we can go on in this Agadata. This Agadata keeps going and going. I'm eager to finish up the Agadata. My Rebbe used to skip Agadata, by the way.
There's a teaching that the greater the yetzer, the greater the man.
I guess if a person has a very strong yetzer called Gol Michaver Yitzhak Golomenu, then he can achieve great things, but ultimately, you know, his yetzer will get the best of him if his orientation is pleasure seeking. Okay, before the Gemara had a pasuk in Tehillim, Ki Hinei HaRashayim Yidrichun Keshet, that the Rashayim send their arrows out in the context of the encounter, the controversy between Chizkiah and Shevna. Now the Gemara wants to interpret the next pasuk in that same context, and the pasuk reads the following: Ki hashasos yeharesun tzadik ma paal. And we can try to figure out now with this Gemara what is going on with this Shasos Yeha Resun. So Rabbi Yehuda Rav Eino, we have machlokes between two Amoraim as to how to understand this pasuk. Chada Amor, one opinion is Ilu Chizkiyo V'seyoso Ne'erosim Tzadik Ma'pal. Notice this pasuk is going to sort of enter into the divine thinking and why God is going to see to it that Chizkiyo succeeds and that Shevna will fail, because if Chizkiyo and his followers would be destroyed, Nerosim, be destroyed, then Tzadik Ma'pal, the people who say about God, who's a Tzadik, what is he doing over here? What is he achieving? Where's the reward for the greats like Chizkiyo? V'chad Omar, according to another interpretation, Ilu Beis HaMikdash Yehares, if Sancheirev and his military force will succeed in breaking into Yerushalayim and destroying the Beis HaMikdash, then Tzadik Ma'pol, Hashem who's a Tzadik, where's his power? Where's his might? What did he achieve? In both cases, the question is to try to understand God's thinking and why God is going to do a great miracle to save Chizkiyo v'Seyoso and his people. And we're going to come back to the word hashsos in a minute, but now we're focusing on Yehe Rason, either because Chizkiyo and his people will be destroyed, or if Sancheirev wins, gets his way, the Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed. Is Ma'pal, is Tzadik Ma'pal? Well, what is the Tzadik, meaning with a capital T, HaKadosh Baruch, what is he accomplishing? What is he doing? Where's his power? He's omnipotent. Okay. Then the Gemara says the following. Ve'ula Omar. Ula has a third take on this pasuk. And he says, Ilu machshavosav shalosa rasha eino ne'erosos. If Shevna will be able to achieve his goal and have Chizkiyo HaMelech killed, is then Tzadik Ma'pal. Then Hashem, as a tzaddik, has not achieved anything, because instead of God's ultimate agenda coming to fruition, it would be Shevna's ultimate implication, his implementation. So Rashi explains that ki hashasos yaharesun is a reference to the machshavos of Shevna, which are mentioned in the earlier pasuk. Shasos are machshavos, and yerasun means that these machshavos, these plans of Shevna should be destroyed. Because if not, then Tzadik Ma'pal. Then the question would be, what does Chizkiyo representing Tzidkus, what does he accomplish? Why can't God save Chizkiyo? So the Marsha says that Tzadik Ma'pal means that the word tzaddik is a reference, as we said earlier, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ma'pal, what did he accomplish? His ultimate goal is to keep this world going, because he created the world through the tzaddikim. And if not for the tzaddikim, the world would not continue to exist. So this pasuk is telling us that if Chizkiyo and his people would be killed, chas v'shalom, then the entire purpose of the world would be undermined. And therefore, the same thing should apply with regard to the Beis HaMikdash. If the Beis HaMikdash could be destroyed, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Tzadik Ma'pal. What did he accomplish? The whole purpose of Maisa Breishis was meant to lead up with the Evan Shasiyah and the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So the word Shasos here is a reference, an allusion to the Beis HaMikdash, which is called the Evan which is built on the Evan Shasiyah. So it comes out that we have three different possibilities in terms of the word Shesos. Is Shesos the Machshav of Shevna towards Chizkiyo and his followers? Is it a word that's related to the purpose of Shevna that would ultimately lead to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash? Or is it in general a reference to the Machshavos Ros of Shevna, his plans and what he wanted to achieve with the death of Chizkiah. Now the Gemara wants to know, what is the etymological meaning of the word shesos? What does it mean just in terms of, in Yiddish we call it taich? You know, how would you translate shesos? So Gemara says, Bishleim l'man diomer elu machshavos shel osa rosha, if we go with the third opinion of Ula. Then hainu d'ksiv ki ha-shesos ya-reisun. It means that this is reference to the machshavos of Shevna, and his machshavos are called shasos, because hu shas v'nosnam b'libo. Shas means he contemplates them and he establishes them in his heart. And if he will achieve his goal, his machshavos rose, then Chizkiah will be wiped out. Uman diyor beis hamikdash. If we're talking about the machshavos of Shevna in terms of the destruction of the Migdash Nami, I also understand Shesos, because the Beis HaMikdash, as we said before, is called Shesos, because Hushtas means it's the foundation of the entire world. It's not, we learned in the Mishnah, this Mishnah is in Masecht Yoma. Even Haisa Shom, under the Aron HaKodesh there was a stone, a large stone, Mimos Neviim Arishonim. This dates back to the time of David HaMelech and Shmuel and Shlomo. Ushasiya Haisa Nikres, and it was called Shasiya. Shasiya means foundation, because Mimena Hushtas Olam. The Even Shasiya was the foundation of the entire universe. It was used to create and build the entire universe, the cornerstone. So we see the word Shesos. Elamandiyom, but according to that first opinion, that this pasuk is a remez to Chizkiah v'seyaso, is Heichan Ashkechan Tzadiki di Ikru Shesos. So these Tzadikim are Chizkiah and his followers. Why are they called Shesos? Is there any pasuk in Tanakh that would indicate a close connection between Shesos and the Tzadikim, such that now all the plans of the tzaddikim will be destroyed if Shevna gets his way? So the Gemara says, yes, we find a pasuk in Shmuel that tzaddikim are called shesos. Dichsiv, in the parish of Chana, when she is mispalel, she says, Ki lashem mitzuke eretz vayoshes aleim tevel. You know, it's for God there are tzaddikim, and they are the sodos of the aretz. Mitsuke aretz means they're the foundations of the land itself. Meaning that Hashem builds the entire universe on the shoulders of tzaddikim, not on Hercules' shoulders, but on the shoulders of tzaddikim. And we see from this pasuk that the tzaddikim are called shesos, because it says vayoshes, which is the verb, the conjugated verb of the noun shesos. Ibai same, if not, I have another pasuk in Yeshayo Anovi. It says, Hifli Eitza Higdil Tushia. And the way we interpret this pasuk is that God enlarged, so to speak, the Torah, Higdil Esa Torah, Vilom Deha, and those who study the Torah, and they are called Toshia. Toshia means they're the source of wisdom. So therefore, it could be that Shesos in our apostle, Ki Shesos, HaShesos, Yeharesun, that word Shesos is borrowed from the word Tushia. And it refers to the Tzaddikim, or Chizkiah and his Seah, they are the Tzaddikim who are teaching Torah. And now the Gemara goes into a whole discussion about the word Toshia. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Chanan, Lama Nikra Shmo, why is the Torah called Toshia? And the Gemara says, according to one opinion, Mipnei Shehi Mateshes Kocho Shel Adam. Toshia means not wisdom, but weakness. Mateshes. And the study of Torah, for someone who's dedicated to the study of Torah, will weaken the person. Why will the study of Torah weaken a person? So you could offer a number of possibilities. One is that a person who studies Torah is almost obsessed with the study of Torah. He doesn't have time to go to gym. You know, he's not pumping iron, so he doesn't have the strength. Others would say that even if he does go to the gym, but nevertheless, in those hours that he's dedicated to the study of Torah with amelus, with a tremendous amount of intellectual concentration and power, that weakens a person. And we might mention in this context the story about Reish Lakish. You remember when Reish Lakish was the head of the bandits, but he decided to do tshuva. So the Gemara says that he used to be able to jump over from one side of the river to the other. As soon as he accepted upon himself the Torah, he wasn't able to do so, because Torah mateshes kocho shel adam, it weakens a person. He quotes here in the footnote the Torah Chaim. Many times we've quoted the Torah Chaim. He says, "Eina kavana shali de torach bi amel atori." He rejects our second interpretation that because of the work and the toil in the vineyard of Torah, therefore he became weak. Shari chotvei eitzim v'chotvei anovim v'shar bali malachas hatoreach b'malachas shem lehem meruba mi'amela shel Torah v'einam nikroim toshia. He says you have many people who are workers, and they work very, very hard. They're what you call chotvei eitzim. They cut down wood. My father-in-law spent most of the war years in Siberia, and his job was to cut down trees. And we don't find anywhere that because of that hard work, therefore he's considered toshia, he's considered a weak person. On the contrary, the more you work, the stronger you get. Ela kavana shekachi darka shel Torah shekola oseg banase kocho chalash. Why? Kedesha tisgaber olav koach nishmaso v'daita v'chasmaso. In other words, his axiological priority system or system of values puts all the emphasis on the neshama, on the spiritual element. And if he would be very strong physically, then it might distract him from his Torah. So that if he wants to be totally motivated and focused on his neshama, then he sort of cuts himself off from the physicality and the limitations of the material world, the body itself. Because macha kocho haguf nishal adam isgaber, when his physical powers get stronger and stronger, ein daito nechonu tzlula. His mind, intellectually, is not as sharp and as clear as it should be. Therefore, lomdei Torah become weak, so that they'll be able to study the Torah. Because if their bodies would become strong, so this is a whole metaphysical explanation as to why Torah is mateshes kocho shel adam. It's not based on all the work that you put in and the toil, because we have people who are bali malacha, they put in a lot of work, they cut down trees, and yet they're not weak. So I would have said that's because they're doing physical work. You know, physical work strengthens the body. You know, every muscle of the body, when you pressure it, it gets stronger and stronger. The more you put, the more you press it to work. I mean, there's only one exception, as far as I know. And that's the eye muscle. The more you pressure the eye muscle, the weaker it gets. Remember I told you this? I have a friend named Shefty. He's an ophthalmologist in Baltimore. And he told me that 90%, if not more, of his clients are nearsighted. The 10% belong to a different race. I don't want to mention. You can gather if you know Baltimore. And they're all farsighted. He says, because the 90% are all yeshiva guys. All the yeshiva guys are nearsighted. Why? Because they're studying Torah the whole day and they're putting undue pressure on their eyes, and they become nearsighted. Farsightedness is something totally different. It has nothing to do with pressure on the eye.
That's what they call it, Ner Yisrael.
Right, Ner Yisrael. Right there. They need an extra Ner, you know, the Israelites. You know, they need more light.
Nearsighted.
And they're nearsighted. Oh, I see what you mean. Nearsighted. Oh, I didn't catch. Nearsighted. So in any event, this is a principle called Torah Mateshes Kocho Shel Adam. And therefore the word Toshia has a specific connection to the Talmidei Chachamim. Dover Acher, another possibility as to why the Torah is called Toshia, is Shenitna Bechashoi. that the Torah was given clandestinely. Why? Mipnei Satan, so that the prosecutor on high would not claim, well, the people of Israel they don't deserve the Torah. Leave the Torah up in Shamayim. So it was given bechashai. And the word Toshia comes from the root of chashai. Chashai means something that's done b'tznius, it's done in hiding. Now you and I might ask the following question: is Torah really given in hiding? I mean, the pasuk in Yisro describes the kol subrakim. It seems like it was a very public display. But I would say that what the Gemara has in mind here is the decision to give the Torah to Klal Yisro. That was done in hiding. The actual giving of the Torah, once the divine decision was made, then Hashem doesn't care about the Satan. He's just going to go ahead with his plan. But when he was thinking, should I give the Torah to Klal Yisro, the Satan, so that decision-making process was done b'chashoy.
Maybe another chap, if I may. First luchos, given the kolos of Brokim, smashed.
Right.
Second one, it's getting quiet with
its sneeze.
Last the
prayer. Excellent. Second set of luchos is sneeze. Dovar Acher, third possibility as to why Toshia is a reference to the Torah is because we split the word into two parts, two segments, and we read it as Tohu Shia. What does that mean, Tohu Shia? Dvarim Shel Tohu Hasha'olam Mishutas Aleim. It means, Tohu means Dibur Vamira She'ein, just 1 second, Asher Ein Bohem Amoshus is Tohu. In other words, Narishkeit, when you speak words that have no significance, that's called Tohu. And Shia, Olam Mushtas Aleim. Just 1 second. Oh, I see what he's saying. Tohu means something that's not physical, that you can't sink your teeth in. It's not tangible. Tohu means something abstract. In the Hebrew, we translate it as Davar Kibo Dibur Vamir She'ein Bohem Mamashut. Right? It's not like a food or a table or a physical object that you can actually hold in your hands. It's abstract, speech. It's just it's kolos, which are very abstract. And nevertheless, Shia means Ha'ola Mushtas Aleim. Remember, we said that the word Mushtas means it's a foundation. Now, I thought that at this point the Agadita would end, but in truth there's one more piece in the Agadita. We'll see if we can just want to make a siyum on the Agadita. Omar Ula says Machshava Mo'elas Afilu LeDivrei Torah. In other words, if a person is worried, where he's going to get his next meal from, so that has a negative influence even on Divrei Torah. It's going to cause him to forget his Torah. So anxiety is not healthy for Torah knowledge, for retaining Torah knowledge. Shenemar, the Pasuk says in Iyov, with regard to describing the greatness of God, Mefir machshavos arumim velota seno yideim tushia. God is mevatel the machshavos of the chachamim. The word arumim, as we'll soon see, is an allusion to the Talmidei Chachamim, and lo tasena yadam tushia. He will not be able to give them the Torah and have the Torah maintained. Why? Because Hashem says, you know what? Rely on me, and I'll provide for you whatever sustenance you need. And the idea or the thoughts or the tension of the Chachamim when they think, oh no, where am I going to get my zonos? Those are going to undermine Toshia. Amar Rabbah, imasukim lishma. However, if they really study Torah l'shem shamayim with a pure intention, is eno mo'eles, that will not cause shichacha. they will not forget their Torah. So the best way of learning Torah in a way that will preserve the Torah is to learn the Torah lishma. Shenemar, as it says in Mishlei, Rabos machshavos b'lev ish v'atzas Hashem hisakum. And Rabbi's going to interpret this pasuk as if it's related to our discussion here, which means that even if a person has thoughts about mizonos, he's worried about his income, but nevertheless, atzas Hashem yisakum, you should know that eitzah sheyesh bo dvar Hashem, if your dedication to Torah study is lishma, hisakum liolam, then God says, rely on me, I give you the eitzah, and therefore, hisakum liolam, you won't forget your Torah. Okay then, so that concludes the Agadita, and we get back to Psuli Avis, which was who remembers the subject that we were studying until now.
What comes to mind is the English word touche, giving a retort or a comeback.
Yeah. I suspect that the word touche is French. I'm just guessing. Okay. It sounds French.
Like touch. Yeah.
That's the okay, Rabosei. So let's see, we still have the pages from yesterday that we can give out. If those of you would like to study